hours. We're myself, Jeff Feynman, Dr. Christina Chambreau, and guests tonight, oh, and Dr. Jean, who you can't see, and our guests, Dr. Jess Turner and Dr. Sue Howell, are here to talk everything about nutrition. So I think we'll get started by... Hey,
Dr. Jeff, it's actually Dr. Bradley, Jess Bradley.
Even better.
Used to be Turner.
Well, then we should...
Well, is that good news? Did you get married?
I got married, but I'm actually divorced now, but I kept my married name, so.
Okay. Well, which one do you want to use?
It's Bradley. Yeah, okay. Legally. Awesome. We'll keep the Bradley.
Right. Sorry about that, Jess.
No worries.
So Dr. Jess Bradley is based in Phoenix, Arizona. So if you guys have friends in Phoenix, you get to introduce your friends to her.
So before we start putting all your symptoms, your guys' symptoms into context of, you know, what's going on in their lives, any specific questions that you want to throw out to begin with?
On any topic at all. Nutrition, energy medicine. Muscle testing for nutrition. Muscle testing for anything else.
You could go over muscle testing for nutrition. I actually don't know about that. I would love to hear more about that.
Dr. Sue is an expert in that.
Oh, I don't know if I'm an expert, but I do it every day. So it's pretty cool. Should I explain what muscle testing is, or does everybody get that? Okay.
I think we know that. Well, I don't know. Anyone else?
Yeah, yeah. Like muscle testing is a form of energy medicine, and it uses the nervous system to like just figure out where different imbalances lie, so you can get the feeling of different energy in different organs, for example, or the nervous system just by using a muscle reflex. In people, it's done like with an extended arm. A person will extend their arm and then the practitioner will press on the arm, and that kind of engages the deltoid muscle up here. But we can't ask a dog or a cat to hold their arm out. So a muscle test on an animal is done through an indirect tester. So it's kind of like an electric fence. You know, when you touch it, you get zapped. But if you have three people, one person touching the fence, one person in the middle, and one person on the end, the person that gets zapped is the person on the end. Does that make sense? It flows through. So the energy flows through from the dog through the indirect tester to their arm, and their arm is going to pick up the energy from the pet. So you can test the indirect tester's arm. Does that make sense?
So do you have like two people, one's the indirect you, and then one's connected to the pet? Is that what you're saying?
I'll take that. No, the pet would be the in-betweener. I mean, the pet would be the fence, and the indirect tester would be the in-between. And then the energy comes and I can feel how much energy is there by pressure on the arm. So it's kind of cool. I mean, it would be better to demonstrate it than so. Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah. There's a couple of demonstrations on my website. It's thrivepetvet.com, and under NRT, which is nutrition response testing. And that's a form of nutritional muscle testing. So like, yeah, you can get an idea just where weaknesses are. The pet's body can tell you in real time, like what supplements they really kind of work well with and which things their body rejects. So just by putting something against a pet's body, it'll change the energy of the nervous system. So it'll either potentially make it stronger or it can make it really weak. And you don't want to give pets things that weaken their system. So it's kind of a cool way instead of guessing or using your best guess on what a pet needs, you can kind of find out in a priority manner what the problems are and what's stressing the body, like chemicals or heavy metals, viruses, you name it, you know, you can kind of use test kits that are created to help us understand certain imbalances that kind of hide in the body. Yeah.
And we talked about this a lot, Dr. Sue Wagner. So go back and look at the Empower Hours that we did. Sue Wagner talked about the energetic basis. She's a veterinary neurologist. And then Sue Whitaker showed us how you don't need two people to do applied kinesiology, but you can use pendulum, dowsing. You can use your finger like this. Here's the person's arm, and here's the practitioner's hand pushing down on the arm. So my name is Christina, strong. My name is Sue, weak. So there are multiple, it's a whole area to explore, but go back and review that month.
Yeah, I've seen it in humans. I just didn't know how to do it in pets, but I would love to learn that. I'll go back and look at those.
Yeah, it's very cool. I love it. It takes away the guesswork and gets you right to where you want to be.
Yeah, I'm going to use it on my dog.
Absolutely. I mean, you can, yeah, it's fun to play around with.
The challenge for everybody is it's important how you ask the questions. So a lot of times people dip into this area and they find they get very conflicting answers, or they get answers that don't make sense, or they try what it's said to do and it doesn't help. So if you ask, is this the best? Is this going to help? Is this needed today? It may not be needed tomorrow. So sometimes how you ask the question can influence the answer. So it's just one more tool to be using.
Absolutely.
And some of our members have been using it a lot, others not so much. Others brand new to it and haven't tried it at all.
And I have to be the bearer of the conventional FET model, which doesn't include any of the energy stuff at all. So although we know all this that we talk about energy was works, you have to realize that if you go to your local conventional vet and mention anything related to EK or nutrition response therapy or homeopathy or any energetic modality, you're probably going to get raised eyebrows or more.
So which is why we emphasize so much in the 101. And most of you who are here today, I think, already have this, but we emphasize building your holistic care team. So you have people that you can contact. So you have a list of phone numbers, even if you haven't worked with them. You know, if you've got a nutrition issue, you're worried about it maybe being an allergy, you're concerned about which foods, you've got Sue Howell on your list. You may or may not have consulted with her yet, but she's there. And if you have a cat question, you have Dr. Jean Hovey on your list and her website, and Dr. Howell's website. So you have all that information there, and you have a primary holistic vet who you're working with by phone or locally, so that you don't have to put up with that from conventional veterinarians as much, as often.
I can try to screen share a picture of muscle testing if that's interesting to anybody.
Sure, great.
Okay, let me see if I can do that.
As Bonnie said, isn't technology great?
Yeah. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the dog, my indirect tester is the person over here. I'm touching the dog and she's actually touching the dog too. You all have to be in contact because it's like on a circuit, right? So she's touching the dog back here and I am touching an organ like the heart. So I'm asking the heart a question and then I'm testing the strength of the muscle reflex on her arm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And these are supplements and we're testing to see if these are appropriate and the dog's heart is strong with these supplements. Yeah.
And see, that's where you might want to ask two questions. Will this supplement help Susie's heart? And then maybe ask, is this supplement good for Susie overall?
True. Or, and then
in addition to this supplement, is there another supplement that's needed? So lots of ways to playing around with the different questions is definitely important.
And I think depending on what training you have too, I mean, those questions are part of a method or a step-by-step deal. So those questions get asked along the way to double check your work. So that's kind of cool.
Awesome. And any other questions about nutrition response or AKA or applying it to your guys?
So we've been through a few just for people who are listening to this on the playback is Whitney has a dog who's always burped one or two times after she eats. I say, not worry about it. She's always done it. It's not getting worse. Maybe try, I think you've done this, Whitney, but probiotics, digestive enzymes, something like that. Or what would you say, Dr. Howell? Burping.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, here we go. Burping.
Thanks.
Okay. Now to you, Dr. Sue.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd agree with you, Christina. If it's like something that happens all the time, then, you know, as long as everything else is fine, but you can have digestive where you're not breaking down the food properly. And so you're getting fermentation gas burping up through the, you know, that can be a burping situation where you just need to be able to digest your food better. Like,
if I can just say something, I've always not worried about it because she's always done it. It just seems like she is uncomfortable because she eats on the mind platter. So she doesn't eat fast. I spread it out nicely. I even do two sittings. So I put half of it on there, spread it out, and then the other half. But then she'll kind of like go in the corner and hang her head down low until she burps. And it just looks like she feels uncomfortable, which is why it always worries me. It doesn't seem like there's anything wrong by any means because her beam is fine. She eats fine. It just looks like she's uncomfortable. So that's the only reason I keep asking.
Well, I think it's worth asking because of your extra observation. Right. And is she being treated with homeopathy in general for anything constitutionally?
No, nothing really. I talked to Dr. Jeff and I tried silica maybe like a year ago just to try to resolve this. And it obviously didn't work. I'm doing a digestive enzyme, which maybe it's less, it's pretty much after all her meals, but they seem like they're less, what's the right word?
Less distressing.
Less big. But it happens, you know, she eats raw, she gets her fermented goat's milk, and not all at the same time. So I just can't tell what it is. I mean, she literally goes under the table and hangs her head down low. And then I can tell once she burps, she's fine.
Mm-hmm. So, wait, have you ever fed her anything other than raw food?
No, you know, like regular dog food. Well, she gets, you know, I give her
cooked meat rather than raw.
Same food, but
no.
Yeah, I would experiment with a wide variety. You know, one of the things that I think is important and love to hear you chime in on this, Dr. Sue, is to feed a wide variety of different foods. If not for your main meal, at least, you know, frequently, every food you have in the house, basically. And that's useful for three reasons. One, if you've got a condition like this with burping, discover maybe some foods trigger it and others don't. Number two, in terms of selecting a homeopathic medicine, if we have food cravings and food aversions that are unusual for a dog, then those can be very useful. I've talked about the dog who in a 5-story townhouse if he was up in the office with the other four standard poodles and somebody went down to the kitchen on the first floor and opened the refrigerator door and opened the butter door, he would run downstairs. So that was a butter craving. So that would be useful in selecting a homeopathic medicine for him. And then three, it's important because if a food that you're feeding, if you're feeding a prepared raw food, then that company goes out of business. Sometimes animals go on a hunger strike, more likely cats than dogs or small dogs than big dogs, but that can happen. Or if they're ill, it's really wonderful to know what they will crave. Right. What are your fallbacks?
I do feed her a variety. I mean, the variety of brands, a variety of proteins, of, you know, vegetables, fruits. So maybe, I don't know if I should try cooking.
Yeah, just I would say that it's probably, and I like what you're saying, Christina, because variety is really important, that, you know, dogs that don't digest their meat, especially raw meat, because you sound like you're doing a pretty good meat-based diet, that it's almost like they have, it's a symptom of hypochlorhydria, which is not enough stomach acid. So they need to be able to have the stomach acid there to break their food down, especially raw food, high protein food. So getting like a digestive enzyme, I like that you're doing that, but I think she needs also some like betaine or some acidic factor to help her digest it. And like Standard Process has got a product called Zypan, which has enzymes, but also betaine. I'm sure there are other companies that do too. So that would be where I would probably start, along with, you know,
I do the digestive enzyme once a day. Maybe I should try it twice.
I would give it with each meal. And
each meal. Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, I'd probably get some, it's betaine, which is typically from beets. but it will actually help her break down the proteins.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was going to try Green Juju, just came out with a new beets.
Love it.
And I was going to buy, I haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. I think they mailed it to stores yet, but I was going to try it.
Yeah, no, it's great. And beets will help her gallbladder too. So like for fat digestion and stuff, beets are great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if the burping, when does she do the burping? Within 2 minutes of eating, half an hour of eating? When does she look uncomfortable?
I pick up the platter and she's over in the corner burping. So it's within.
So that's not digestion then, is it, Dr. Sue? If it's right away like that, is that more something maybe in the esophagus or?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point too. It depends on how, I mean, you said she's not eating really fast either. I mean, you know, some dogs, it just goes down and
comes back up.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should split the meal into three. I mean, it doesn't seem fast. I mean, I videotaped it because I wanted the people that make the mind platter to see it. And it took her, I don't know, 90 seconds to finish what was on the platter, which to me seems.
Does she eat on the floor or does she eat elevated?
No, it's on the floor.
So that could be another thing, because it's got to go in and down. Do you know what I mean? She's on the floor and yeah. So
I thought they said it was better that they're on the floor.
I think in general it is, but if she's having problems, what do you guys think, Jeff?
Maybe I could try.
I mean, you can experiment, but you know, in my opinion, and what we've talked about this before, all of us have talked about this before, that when you find something that works, you know, but you have to keep using it over and over again, whether it's feeding on the floor, feeding a special food or a special kind of digestive enzyme, you're not really treating the underlying, you know, energetic imbalance. You're kind of palliating the symptom, which is right. Fine if that's your goal.
Well, it's not. I just haven't been able to figure out why she's doing it.
I know it's not your goal, but I'm just saying I was answering Dr. Sue's question.
And you may not find out why she's doing it. You don't need to find out why in order to select the correct homeopathic medicine. But for something like this, where there's basically just one symptom, it may take, you know, a good prescriber 3 or 4 tries of different homeopathic medicines to come up with the correct one. But I mean, this sounds like a really good symptom. Actually, it's a really good homeopathic symptom. I'm not sure how I'd repertorize it, but you know, eating, So discomfort after eating ameliorated by burping.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like it should be a good homeopathic symptom. So you may want to consult with Dr. Jeff again.
Okay.
And Sid said, so there seems to be, there's a whole lot of controversy about feeding up, feeding down. And yeah. So Sid said that she's found that slightly elevating the food bowl relative to the dog's height seems to help. But it's so important to not have it too high or too, you know. Now, when I'm drawing a blank, Carol spoke on the de-stress day, I think she talked about how important it was to feed down and not to feed elevated. So again, there are a lot of different opinions. So anytime there's a lot of different opinions about one particular topic, that means there's no one right answer. I mean, there never is one right answer, but it means experiment and see what works for you and for your dog.
Yeah.
And what makes common sense to you.
I kind of agree, though, with the changing up the nutrition. If she's always done it, maybe she's reacting to that, what she's eating, and maybe trying different foods to see if she reacts to that, or like Dr. Sue was saying with the beets, I think that could really help if that's the issue, if the underlying, because a lot of, she may not be megaesophagus, but she may have like esophagitis, like a small thing all going on there too. And that can help with that. And if that is the cause, then the beet juice would really help kind of bring that inflammation down in that area as well. And maybe help with the burping if that's what the cause is. But I would say trying to different things that they were saying really kind of makes sense to just kind of see if that does help it, if that is what it is. Nutrition is usually a big thing. It usually is. And a lot of times food is medicine. And so food is medicine, not a lot of times, but it is. And so maybe she's reacting. Raw is great too, but I've had some dogs that have been on raw and then need to switch as they get older off raw. According to what they're having. And so sometimes, you know, it could be a small thing that's going on with her and then you switch up the food and that's it yep. Cures it.
Fixes it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so July brings up an issue, which is her dog is always hungry in capitals, even though he's fed a ton and he's on the thinner side. So you want to unmute yourself? Are you there?
And I would just have one question before we ask for more from July. Okay. And that one other question is if there are any other GI symptoms or any symptoms.
Yeah, so he does often regurgitate his food too. And I mean, I know that his vitality is like vital force is off because he gets allergic reactions. He is pretty fearful a lot of the time. So if he is, if he exercises more or is left alone and subsequently more fearful, then his two meals and one meal is for like raw food. That's what he eats. Is what he should eat in the whole day, but that's what he gets out twice a day. And then he'll end up needing a third one if there's something going on, or he just gets really in my face like tonight about like, I need to eat your dinner. Like I am still so starving and I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So then I'll feed him more, but he does regurgitate his food quite often, and he does burp. But not that, I think it's mostly from eating fast because it's not all the time.
And have you done either really good TCVM or homeopathy with him to address all of those issues? Because one treatment addresses all of those issues when the energy field is balanced.
Yeah, I worked with a vet that did TCVM and to address his allergic reactions, which he said was from the heat, but I think it was actually a reaction of flea bites maybe. The herbs just made it so that he didn't want to eat his food. And there was nothing else that was happening. And there was a non-related issue with that vet, and I have stopped seeing him. So,
well, you may want to try homeopathy.
Yeah.
Or give Dr. Sue a call for
nutrition.
Virtual consult for nutrition.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'd be great.
Or pick a homeopath. There's enough symptoms there going on to.
Yeah.
Thanks.
For sure.
It sounds like me, stress eating. When I'm anxious, I love to eat. Mm. My dear friend can hardly keep 96 pounds on her. And when she's stressed, she doesn't eat. So we're all unique individuals. Yes, Bonnie, July's dog has anxiety. A lot of anxiety issues, as well as allergies, as well as the GI tract. So here's a good question for Dr. Sue and Dr. Jess. What is the significance of dogs either eating or never eating what they throw up?
Do you want to take that one, Jess?
You can take it,
Dr. Sue. Oh, okay. I mean, I don't know. I would say didn't make it down the first time. It's got to go down the second time. They didn't digest it the first time. It's like when they eat their stool, right? That stuff didn't make it all the way through the first time. It's got to go back through. That would be my thought.
But some dogs don't eat what they throw up.
Some dogs don't eat what they throw up.
And that's what I'm looking at is what's the difference here between dogs who do eat what they throw up, which sort of makes more sense, and dogs that don't eat. I wonder
I'd say that's more symptomatic than if they don't eat what they throw up, but they just, there's something really off balance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that throwing up and eating it again is a good thing, but it's, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something else going on there. It's like anything can cause anything, and you don't always have what you've got. That's the two things I learned. Anything can cause anything, and you don't always have what you've got. So
what about you, Dr. Jess?
I honestly don't know. The good thing I like is to see what's vomiting. So it's like giving me an opportunity to be like, okay, is it digesting or is it not? Thank you. And then they can eat it if they want. But you know, that's, I honestly don't know why some do and some don't.
Okay.
I'm sure there's a reason though. Because dogs in the wild do the same thing. So there's something to it. And I'm not sure, but I know that they inherently know too, when they need to or when they don't, it seems like.
And Dr. Christina, do you want to answer from the perspective of a homeopath, why one dog would do it and one wouldn't? Or not? You just lost your audio.
Individual vital force, but you try. See if you have anything more to add.
Nope. Just that, you know, some dogs and some remedy types are very, very, very clean and particular, and they'd rather have nothing to do with their vomit, even though it's a full meal in front of them. And it would probably depend on what's in the regurg of vomit. And you know that just because they vomit all the food up doesn't mean it's regurg. Regurg and vomiting are basically only if you observe them. Vomiting being active, you know, an active process, and regurg being like they're burping up their food, which could be right after eating or an hour later. And if they vomit, regurg undigested food an hour later, that's another good homeopathic symptom. Why are they not digesting the food or the next morning? So yeah, that was my answer as well, Dr. Christina, that it's all individual, that every vital force is going to be different. And it's going to bear on what remedy, what homeopathic medicine they need.
And Jenny's answer was good, or contribution was good. She had a dog who would throw up and would wait, or regurge, and would wait until Jenny said, "Thank you, now you can eat it." That was like cats who would bring me mice. I would go, "What a great hunter you are. I'm not hungry now. Would you eat him?" And sometimes they would. Yeah, it is a challenge when you're living in Mexico or other countries to get all of the products that we talk about. So anytime when you're living in a country where it's limited, I think the most important thing is to get more and more and more trained in all of the energetic modalities like Reiki, Bengstrom, Eden Energy Medicine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the more the better. Discover which one works the best for you. And then also look to what the local shamans do and see if there are things that are available locally. Okay, now Francine, vomit a small amount of clear fluid at 4:30 to 5:30 in the morning. And my question for you, Francine, is were they doing this before they were treated with homeopathy, or has it only happened after homeopathy?
I believe after they've been treated with homeopathy, but because they've been treated for years with homeopathy.
Oh, okay.
But this just started, I would say, within the last year or so. Now okay. They're both.
So I would go back in your journal, very carefully go back and look to see, did they both start doing it at the same time? And were they both given a different, in their individual prescribing, had they both each been given a new homeopathic medicine prior to that starting? Was there any other contributing cause? You moved, new food, things like that. So I'd really pay attention to that. Okay. And then of course, as Dr. Jean said, you know, is that cats often do that. Even very healthy cats may throw up a little bit if they need to eat later at night. But yeah, feeding at 9:30 should be late enough.
Well, that, you know, that's a fairly good time period between 8:30 and 4:30. So if you were, what time do you go to bed? Not to get too personal, Francine.
usually I go to bed around 11.
I would give them maybe, I would think about giving them a little tablespoon of food, maybe even just a little baby food right at bedtime and see if that holds them over. Sometimes their tummies just seem to get a little too acidic overnight with no food in.
Okay.
Feeding them a titch later sometimes really resolves that, but that is a very common thing in kitty cats. Not necessarily kitty cats that have been so beautifully holistically treated, but cats are cats.
Yet that they are. They do eat raw, so would it be okay to give them a little bit of their raw, a variety of raw food?
Sure, sure.
Versus
just a little something before they go to sleep and see if that holds them over a little bit better.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And Dr. Sue, not to put you on the spot, but one of the big, like you mentioned before we started, one of the big FAQ questions about nutrition in animals is feeding the gut.
And yes.
I'm wondering, since you probably deal with that every day or questions about that every day, any general pointers?
to help create a healthy microbiome.
Yeah, a balanced microbiome and gut, fermented, not fermented probiotics, no
problem. Oh my gosh, this is such a big topic, Jeff. Like, oh wow, that's like a whole 2 days worth of information. But I think in general, I'm going back to Christina and, you know, Jess, you probably could say your piece too about this, but variety, fresh food, certainly fermented foods. I mean, there's been a lot of research done on different foods that help the gut, but again, every individual is different, though like places like Animal Biome have been mapping the gut flora in healthy dogs. And, you know, there's a certain like six specific bacterial genuses that belong there, and they can get out of balance. And it just depends on what that individual imbalance is as to what they need to correct it. But I think in general, it's like a lot of variety, and you need fiber. Fermented foods can help. Beets can help. Brown rice, millet, buckwheat, those things are great. I'm using a lot of like inulin, soluble, insoluble fiber, depending upon what's going on there. I find a lot of the rod fed dogs that I send biome tests in on, they tend to have an imbalance in that they need a little more fiber in their diet because they're not getting quite enough just with, you know, the vegetable fiber that the little bit that's in the raw food. So I'm a proponent of grains to a degree. I really think healthy grains are good for them. We're learning so much more about it. I don't know. It's such a big topic. Kefir has been studied quite a bit too. I just read an article about how kefir brought pigs that had had terrible dysbiosis back into healthy gut. So yeah, definitely fermented foods.
So here's a question for you. Fermented foods, there are products like Green Juju is going to be coming out with it, like Billy talked. Mm-hmm. But we have fermented foods on our shelf. So we have sauerkraut, we have yogurt, mm-hmm. we have kefir, what about all those? Any of those? Are they Absolutely. Good to feed?
Yeah, I mean, I would feed kefir, I would feed yogurt. Some dogs can't handle cow's milk so well. So, I mean, you can do goat's milk yogurt.
Raw tripe,
for sure. The like feeds like, the organ feeds the organ, right? And it's fermented in its own right because green tripe, especially because you've got all of that good plant matter in there that's been fermenting down in the gut of that animal. So yeah, I love all of those things. I think it's just important for dogs, like you said, to get that variety. They need all of those things, and cats, they can. So,
and even just plain raw goat's milk that hasn't been fermented has a phenomenal number of bacteria in it. Mm-hmm. Compared to cow's milk and other things. I mean, I forget what do you know the number, Jess or Dr. Sue? Because it was phenomenal when I read Answers, the gal who started Answers, mm-hmm. her mother was ill, she started drinking raw goat's milk, and she had a number in there of how many organisms were in raw goat's milk.
Yeah, it's pretty outstanding. And I'd much rather see an animal get their gut healthy and kept healthy with real food than with a probiotic supplement. I think it's really hard to get a supplement that has all of the things that a pet's gut that's natural to them. And you're not going to get all of that. And you can actually imbalance the gut even more. And I've seen this on tests that I've done too, where they've been on a probiotic for, you know, cause everybody goes on probiotic, and that probiotic is actually out competing all of the natural flora. And that's not good either. So I don't think it's healthy for dogs to take probiotic supplements on an ongoing basis.
What about rotational probiotics, doctors?
like trying different probiotics different times. That's what I recommend.
Sure. I mean, I think that's possible. I think where I'm seeing the research right now is in more of a yeast-based probiotic, Espalardi, being more reparative, especially during antibiotic treatment, that it has much better effect than probiotics do, because probiotics are killed by the acid in the dog's and cat's stomach. And the probiotics are going to actually be killed by the antibiotics, whereas Espalardi is immune to all of that. And it fosters, it as a prebiotic probiotic, it fosters healthy flora. Does that make sense? So yeah, so much interesting stuff. But yeah, I'm changing the way I do things because of the way I've been learning this recently.
New stuff. And
yeah. Good. Yeah. Because I used to like rotate probiotics, or like everybody that was on an antibiotic got a probiotic. Well, now the stuff about Espalardi is much more compelling, I think. The research is much more compelling. And post-antibiotic therapy too, I mean, the research is more in giving fiber supplement to restore the healthy flora.
Rather than probiotics.
Correct.
That's really important for people.
Isn't that
to
interesting?
Hear.
Yeah. 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 So you just like, yeah, give inulin or psyllium to help them come back around again.
Now, have you heard of a product called Coco-Yo? Christine said that Billy recommended Coco-Yo and it's working very well. Christine, what is it working well for? What is it correcting?
Firm stool.
Oh, stool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Sue, can you type in the chat what you were talking about?
As far
the
as
organism?
The organism, the Elephorus, because I didn't get it either.
It's Saccharomyces boulardii yeast probiotic. I'm putting this in there right now, just a second. I can't type while I talk. So,
okay. Well, we'll talk and you type. So, actually, July brings up an interesting comment. She's got multiple cats, multiple flower essences, and the challenge of doing that. Challenge of treating multiple animals. Period. Of course, is a challenge. And so I asked her if she was doing any muscle testing, pendulum, et cetera. And she said she wants to do that, but doesn't trust herself. Flower essences are the perfect place to practice because you cannot cause any harm with flower essences. So muscle test every day for who needs to get what. Do it for 2 weeks. And see what happens. And then maybe try muscle testing just with one of them and see if you're getting better results. It just takes practice. That's the key. The key is practice, practice, practice. Well, if you're getting inconsistent answers, if you repeatedly ask the same question, the body doesn't seem to always like that. So,
I would say,
I love it.
I would say about flower essences, no, you can't hurt them at all, but you can cause a bit of an aggravation. I have seen that a few times.
But pretty rarely, right?
Flower essences, they'll get a little twitchy, you know, the symptom will get worse and then turn around and resolve within a few days. And if you see an aggravation, you just give Rescue Remedy alone for a couple days. I have seen it maybe 4 or 5 times in my career, and I've been doing flower essences since the 80s. So, you know, like last century 80s.
So, okay, not 100% safe, but 99.8%
safe. Well, even if you see a little aggravation, it's not going to hurt them, but it can freak people out if they think it nothing will ever happen. It can, but it's never going to be harmful.
So I just want to clarify this, Dr. Sue. So you do the yeast probiotic for pets while they're on the antibiotics.
Correct.
But after, when they're off the antibiotics, you switch to the inulin fiber.
Correct.
Ah, okay.
Isn't that crazy? And I'm just, like I said, I'm just learning this too. And so it's been very, it's been effective. It's been effective. And because I send in a lot of tests to Animal Biome, where they're actually mapping the biome, I can, you can see the changes. You can see what's happening to the flora, and it's pretty cool. So,
hey, yeah. Dr. Sue, have you used a lot of like food, fermented foods, like as the probiotic, and then adding in the yeast probiotic so that it's actually working? Because I've heard the same, you know, a lot of the probiotics, they, they don't even make it to the gut. But if you're using like goat's milk, raw goat's milk and stuff like that, in addition to the yeast, have the test come back pretty good, because they're, you're kind of getting the probiotic with the food, but you're also adding that in versus just using a probiotic that's manufactured?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, I don't know the answer to it, to be honest, because I can tell you, I have one little dog recently who eats a ton of raw goat's milk. I mean, it's part of his, almost like half his meal. And his biome looks a little bit different on, you know, when they map it. And, you know, they're still trying to study why that's happening, you know, because, like, again, every individual is different. So when you take a pool of healthy dogs and study, I mean, you know, it's, it depends on what they're eating too, as to what their biome is going to look like. Right. So, like a raw fed dog's biome is going to look different than a dog who eats kibble. So, you know, the idea of what is healthy, I think too, is kind of like, you know, you're just looking for dogs that are not symptomatic for skin or gut problems, and they're, you know,
as opposed to our level of health, which is none of the early warning signs of illness, great beam, plus nothing, no symptoms.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I think they're doing so much more work on it, and they are starting to ask more questions about what's this dog eating? What supplements are they taking? You know, because there's all of that influence too of herbs, and, you know, how that affects the biome and turns things in a different way. So yeah, it's fascinating. It is. But I swear, in my practice, I don't know about you, Jess, you can, but like, I do, like, any dog that comes in with digestive problems or skin problems, I try to run a biome test on, just because I want to know, you know, if that's a huge contributor to that symptom.
Yeah, gut is huge. And usually you can fix it with diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with just changing up the diet and whatever.
You can't just give probiotics and ignore the diet.
Right.
You have to think about the diet.
Right.
And there is no one right diet. That's the, you know, we're getting back to that again. Okay. You know, if you look at it from a Chinese medicine, Chinese food therapy, they use a lot of grains, cooked meats. So, it, you know, not, and many animals thrive on that. So it really is, it's not about going out and buying a commercial diet. All the time,
right?
And relying and coming from the idea that somebody else knows what your dog needs. It really is for us to discover what we need as individuals, what our cats need, what our dogs need, what our kids need. And it's all different, and there's no one right answer. And as Dr. Jess was saying, it can change over time as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes as they get older, they may need something different.
Well, that's the great thing that I like about Chinese medicine too, is that they take into the fact of like what's going on and then try to solve the root with nutrition. Nutrition's one, movement is another thing, moving the energy lines and stuff, but nutrition's huge. And a lot of the times you can, but it like you were saying, it's all individual, because you got to look at the animal, what's happening with the animal, and treat with the foods that are right for that animal. And the energies of the foods have different energies too. And that is what helps heal the root. And that's different for every animal, just like in humans too. Some humans can't eat raw veggies and some can and need that, you know, it's all very individual and it depends on what's going on with our gut as well. And so it's important to heal the gut, but also bring that nutrition to get rid of the root cause, which was causing that issue. But it also changes with age. A dog can do great on a raw diet forever. And then when it goes into like what we call spleen chi issues, it's not good to be on a raw diet anymore. But is that raw diet better than kibble? Yes, 100%. You know, and those are things we need to all look at, how we can do better each time, and then reevaluating what our dog's telling us with what they're eating.
And so now everybody going, oh my God, it sounds too complicated. Nope. Just feed a variety, two things, feed a right. variety of different variety and observe your animals and right. keep a, and often the observing, if you keep a journal, which of course is a member benefit, you can download the journal or however you want to keep your journal. But if you keep track, then, you know, that those are the two things. And it's not critical. It's like, there's no magic in this. There's no, nobody knows the right answer. And, you know, muscle testing can help. So play around with that. And Sid's made some good points here in terms of muscle testing, that there's so many, you know, and Dr. Sue talked about doing it, you know, in the more formal way. So there are multiple ways to approach it, but don't let it get you confused. Just be more flexible. Think people, how do I eat? Am I going to a nutritionist every week to get my diet balanced? Am I buying a balanced product from some company to take to balance my diet? No, I'm trying TCVM at one point, Anthony Williams at another point, some other diet at another point, allergy testing at another point. So think about yourself. Think about what you would feed your, how you would feed your kids. And just relax. Go back and access the de-stressing workshop, you know, and I talked about mindful preparation of your food for your animals. Just be present when you're making your foods and be present, breathe, bless the foods, thank the farmers who made it and the people who delivered it and all of that. And a lot of that's going to make a big difference. So relax about food.
And the take home from the de-stress event, just go with the flow.
And just know you're doing a lot better than if your pet were eating a strictly kibble diet, like Jess said. You know, any little bit is a huge improvement. So yeah, don't be worried.
So how many of you, and the other thing is I also know after 40 years, I have seen animals literally thrive on commercial diets. So for some animals, that's not a susceptibility problem for them. Now, I would say that was more true 20 years ago than it is now, because we have so much more glyphosate and crap in our foods, and the commercial food companies are using a lot of that crap. But it's still, I mean, there was an animal behavior gal online who firmly believed that cats are insect eaters and they must have dry food out, free choice. And her cats, she over a period of 30 years, 40 years, her cats were living to be anywhere from 19 to 24. And without major chronic disease, no hyperthyroidism. So you just, again, relax with it. I mean, I still recommend fresh food. Don't get me wrong. I really do recommend fresh food, but just again, relax. And if you are feeding commercial at some point, you know, that's fine. And as Dr. Sue said, just even a little bit can make a difference.
When I was a technician a long time before I was a vet, I worked for a clinic that Mr. Perry, he is an owner that has had, I don't know, three or four now cats that have been in the oldest Guinness Book of World Records. And he was an amazing guy, but his cats always lived and he had cats so high. We always asked him, what's your trick? He said, I give them coffee, bacon, and asparagus and anything I eat, but they get asparagus cakes at every birthday. And he's like, I feed them coffee and bacon every morning.
And wine. Was that the Austin guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. His cat lived to be 38 and he was feeding dry food plus these other foods, plus coffee and wine, because he'd heard that was good for health.
And his cats, he had multiple cats up in like high 20s. Like he had so many cats, but we'd ask him, yeah, that's what he would supplement with asparagus and bacon and coffee. But his cats live very long time. Yeah.
So again, relax. There's wide range of different things. Faculty member Gail Pope, you know, hundreds of thousand cats probably during her time on a fresh food diet, but it was varied, different things. 34 was her oldest, but still adopting them at 16 to get them to live to be 28, 30, 34 is pretty amazing. So
love counts, like Jeannie said too. It's so true. He loved his cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he played with them for hours every night.
He had so many and he literally played with every single one. Yeah.
That's good to hear about that. I'll have to talk to you more about it, Jess.
Yeah, he was an awesome guy. He came into the clinic all the time and I just was amazed that I was like, what? His cats are getting bacon. It's crazy.
And wine.
Oh no.
And they have asparagus cakes every birthday. He'd celebrate with an asparagus cake for every single cat that he had.
And they would eat it.
And they would eat it. Mm-hmm.
They do seem to like asparagus. I mean, I've got a cat that stole the asparagus tonight. So, and yeah, I've heard that a lot.
I think it's time.
Yeah, Dr. Sue, thanks so much for joining us. It was awesome, awesome wrap up of the nutrition month of, what month was that, May? Hey, yeah. So we're going next week into Ayurvedic month, where we're going to talk all about the balance that Ayurveda, which is the Indian system of traditional medicine, which is, well, we'll talk about it in your presenter next week.
Yep.
We'll start looking forward to that introduction. And just so you know, it's now being verified. Even the WHO is finally beginning to study the energetic basis of Ayurveda. And so, stay tuned to the channel in a couple of years. Maybe the energetic model that I mentioned that we're not talking about, maybe we'll be talking about it more and more in the conventional world. But thank you all for coming. And Dr. Jess, Dr. Sue, thanks so much. Dr. Christine, as always, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.